Today on Hoops 360, Paige Beckers joins the show, highlighting the Wing's newfound winning culture. We get into reporting around Adam Silver's advisement to Kathy Engelbert. Plus, did we hit or miss on our preseason award predictions? Stay tuned.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into Hoops 360. We are at the midway point through July. We are just a week away from WNBA All-Star. And so this is the perfect time to do some of our mid-season award check-ins. We did some preseason predictions. We'll see how confident we are, or maybe how we might look back on ourselves a few months ago and think, you idiot, how in the world could you think that? So we'll go through our mid-season awards, but also some of the latest reporting of Adam Silver getting involved in a tough position that Commissioner Kathy Engelbert has been in. We'll break down our thoughts on that. And then last, but very certainly not least, Paige Beckers, absolute WNBA superstar, WNBA all-star, two-time all-star in just two seasons, will stop by the show. So we'll share our conversation with Paige. Cassandra Negley, Caroline Fenton, hanging out with you as always. Cass, how are we doing? How are we feeling? Happy to see you.
I know. It's so nice. Good. Good. Other than wildfire smoke, but it's okay.
Okay. I have heard this. What is going on in the Northeast?
It's just smoke from Canada. And so yesterday it was like a sepia filter, and today it's like a muted blur.
Really? It's that bad?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not great.
Gosh, that's terrifying. Stay safe out there. Everybody stay safe. Keep your inhalers close by.
Yes.
If you have sensitive lungs. Well, I hope that you and everybody up there in the Northeast, anybody that's affected, of course, anybody that's listening in Canada, hope that everybody is staying safe, taking care of themselves, sending our best to everybody that could very much be infected. Do you want to start with one of the biggest controversies, I think would be fair to call it, that we've seen come out recently? There was a report from the Sports Business Journal that because no foul was called on Alyssa Thomas, if we go back to the game that we've been talking about for weeks now, fever, mercury, Alyssa Thomas falls, braces her fall with a fist on Caitlin Clark's neck, a foul was not called, and then a retroactive flagrant two was called. Alyssa Thomas was suspended for one game. That is the, you know, the breakdown that I can give with zero opinion whatsoever. And you're not going to hear that very many places, so appreciate that one. Alyssa Thomas was not called for a foul in that game. Kathy Engelbert did not want to follow up with a suspension. But there were sources that said Adam Silver, commissioner of the NBA, believed that, quote, there was clear evidence of a flagrant foul, that he felt badly for Caitlin Clark, and he said that Kathy Engelbert had to act. Your initial reaction to hearing that Adam Silver reportedly got involved and advised Kathy Engelbert? And who do you think looks bad here?
No one looks great. My initial reaction is this just keeps getting messier and messier and messier, and it's not going to stop being messier. All of this reporting was based on sources kind of right after Adam Silver was asked about Kathy Engelbert's job status, and he, you know, seemed to kind of say what he said, that she's done a good job on the business side, which objectively she has, and they'll kind of reassess as they go along. The thing that stood out to me the most, part one, is this is always messy because the WNBA is not a standalone entity. I think it's easy to forget that. And I think that's where a lot of problems arise. Technically, it is under the NBA umbrella. If you want to go to the WNBA offices, it's the NBA offices and et cetera. That's a really important part to remember here. I think for me, what stood out the most, and I'm going to quote this, quote, other sources close to Engelbert have said she is in an unenviable position, trying not to show favoritism toward the uber popular Clark, while also trying to appease players who believe they've been overshadowed by Clark. This is something that I have kind of noted before and noticed particularly in her press conferences, that when you ask a question about Caitlin Clark, especially early on, she would include a bunch of other players in her answer. It's something that a few of us have kind of talked about. I've heard just kind of in passing that might be at play here, and I don't think it's hard to see. That's a problem. And as you said, like, we keep talking about this. I've written quite a few columns at this point. I think that's one of the bigger issues, is weighing weighing all of these different stakeholders and figuring out what vein to take. So that was what stood out to me. What did you see?
To your point, and you can find all of Cass's columns on yahoosports.com. She does a great job of objectively covering the league. When Kathy Engelbert says she's having a difficult time balancing showing favoritism, appeasing the other players, I get that. I understand that. But that's also not her job. Her job as a commissioner is to be objective and to not be concerned about the perception, to not be concerned about appeasing one group or another group or about showing favoritism or not. Because you shouldn't be favoriting any of your players. You should not be prioritizing one player over another. So if that is genuinely at your core, what you are doing is staying objective across the board, investing into all of your players and franchises equally, then let the criticism come as it may. People may call you out for showing favoritism for Caitlin Clark, but if you know in your heart of hearts, deep in your soul, that that is not what you're doing, then it doesn't matter. If you look at all players and all franchises and all teams equally, then your responses to all of these things will show that you're, you know, weighing all of these teams and all of these players equally. So I understand that feeling. But as a commissioner, you can't worry about that. You can't worry about, you know, your public perception because it's not a popularity contest. Your obligation is to the owners of the league, to the players of the league, not the court of public opinion.
It's such a good point because it feels like nothing has been objective lately. And yes, it's really hard to do. Like, it is really, really hard at this point to parse out what exactly is going on and to just call something what it is. I like the point you mentioned about kind of what Kathy's job is, because I think it's also important to say, especially as we move forward into All-Star Weekend, where she will give one of what I believe is only three press conferences she does all year. Her job is to work for the WNBA Board of Governors, which is all of the team owners. She also obviously works kind of for Adam Silver in a way, in that the NBA owns the WNBA. I think this is where sometimes you have a breakdown or a schism, because what the owners want, team owners, is very different a lot of times from what players want. And in this capacity, players are the employees. Now, arguably, more so than, say, an employee at Walmart or what have you, at a local grocery store, these employees have a lot of power. They are represented by the union, which is a stakeholder in all of this. I think there is clearly, for Kathy, maybe some difficulty, as you said, weighing not even public perception, but all of this internal discussion and feelings. And I think part of that is the history of the WNBA has been shoved down for so long and so lost. It just feels like everything is bubbling to the surface. And this is one of those things. Also interesting to know, for a lot of people who are maybe new to the W, this is the first time that the WNBA has had a commissioner. She was hired in 2019. Everyone before was a president. So it's a little different. But as we started out this conversation, the NBA is still technically kind of in charge.
And also, let's remember, like, there's not a single commissioner that's liked. Like, Roger Goodell gets booed every time he comes out onto the stage. I think Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the NHL, gets called incompetent daily, multiple times a day. So You're not going to please everybody in any job, in any role that you do, but especially when you are the commissioner of a professional sports league. And to your point, you have board of governors and owners that want one thing. You have players and coaches that want another thing. If two individual parties that you work either for or with want separate things, you're not going to please everybody. So what you have to do is what is best for the league. And for Adam Silver and Kathy Engelbert, I think right now my question is, what is Adam Silver's role, and to what extent does he want to, you know, have, like, power, I guess, over the WNBA? because we were talking about this on Yahoo Sports Daily during the CBA negotiations. Adam Silver came out publicly and said, that is Kathy Engelbert's job. That is the WNBA. They're going to do what's best for them. You know, he seemed fairly hands-off, if not hands-off entirely. And then now we have reports of Adam Silver advising Kathy Engelbert of what to do in this specific instance with Alyssa Thomas and Caitlin Clark. So I don't think that you can play both here if you're Adam Silver. You can't get involved when you want to and then stay hands off when you don't feel like getting involved. So what is, and I know you don't have the answer to this. I don't know if anybody has the answer to this, but what is Adam Silver's role with the WNBA at this point?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's a good point in time. It's hard to do in the season, right? Like things happen so fast and the front office and the commissioners have a lot to handle. I think it's a good time for the WNBA to and NBA to really turn inside and ask themselves a lot of questions. Like you said, what is the role of Adam Silver in this? What should the role of Kathy be? You know, a lot of people are calling for a switch in commissioner, which we heard a lot last year after reporting from what Nafisa said she said to her. I think the thing about Kathy has always been the business side is very much there. Like what she has done for the WNBA, you cannot overlook. The way she got them back on the court during COVID, she negotiates the first CBA basically in her first months. You know, she does helm this CBA and gets it done, and everyone does seem rather happy with it. But maybe she hasn't had that kind of overly friendly. Like she's not the kindergarten teacher holding your hand, like super polished kind of forward facing commissioner. And so maybe you look at that and you wonder if she does want to carry on in this capacity, if you can add someone else or put her like as the CEO or what have you, or, you know, looking for, this should be the perfect opportunity, 30th anniversary, to look forward and actually have foresight and what you want it to be. And look at all of these issues that you've had and figure out how best to handle them. Because to bring it all back, you said it 1 million times, you have to be objective about these types of things and not necessarily care about others' opinions. It has to be objective.
She's a fantastic business person. You mentioned the two CBAs that she's overseen, including the most lucrative CBA in the history of the WNBA. We have our first million-dollar women in this sport. She oversaw the $3.1 billion television agreement that will be going on over the next 11 years. It's about $300 million, give or take, each year. Like, that is the reason why we are where we are with the WNBA. The WNBA has never had more attention and eyeballs and investment than it does right now. And whether you want to credit Kathy Engelbert or not for that, she's overseen that as a commissioner. So I don't think anyone can convince me that she is not a brilliant and smart business person. But in terms of being an advocate for the players, a liaison for the players, maybe some of those relationships. I mean, Nafisa Collier even said it. She said, we have the worst commissioner in sports. That's how the players view her. So there's two sides of it. There's one side of the WNBA is financially never been more successful than it is right now, but we still have all of these issues going on that are also overseen by Kathy Engelbert. I do not think that this is a story or a conversation that's going anywhere. Kathy Engelbert herself has been asked how long she wants to remain in this role. So it'll be fascinating to see kind of her state of the union that she gives at WNBA All-Star, which Kath will be at in Chicago. So looking forward to all of those conversations coming down. WNBA All-Star next week, that marks about the midway point in the WNBA season. So no better time to look back at our preseason awards, react to some of those, and we give some of our mid-season awards. So back in May, we made our early season predictions. Ago. It feels like 15 years ago.
So I mean, that much has happened. I've aged 50 years.
I'm a new woman than I was 2 months ago. It was in May. We can look back on some of our preseason predictions. We also did some tiers of teams. Championship contenders with the Fever, the Aces, the Liberty, and the Dream. I don't think we feel any differently about those championship contenders.
Not terribly. I don't feel like strongly different. I will say the Dream have not been shooting the ball well. I wish they were shooting better. The Liberty need to figure out how not to get into these double-digit deficits. And, you know, before we move on, just one thing about New York, they are right back in the same situation they were last year, where they have so many injuries. And yeah. Satu Sabally having that second concussion could not feel worse for her. Leonie Fibish being out is massive. Sabrina Ionescu missed time. They've had 11 different lineups. Last year, they had 18 different lineups. So it's just they've struggled a lot, and Stewie has really patched a lot of things for them. So I think they'll be able to figure it out. Mm-hmm. But certainly they're at the bottom of that contender list.
Which it's we talked about this with the Liberty. I think we even had this exact conversation when we talked Probably. About those championship contenders of, look, if everyone's healthy, they can beat anyone in the WNBA. And if they're not, then we might just be in a full repeat that we saw of last season of an early elimination in the postseason. But those aren't the only teams that I would consider now, just because I would leave those teams in that tier, at least for right now. I would elevate several teams that we put in either our mid-tier or bottom tier. But the Golden State Valkyries maybe higher in – we had them originally mm-hmm. preseason in the mid-tier. I would elevate the Golden State Valkyries. We have the Dallas Wings in our bottom tier contenders. We'll hear from Paige Beckers here in just a little bit in the show. But we have the Dallas Wings in the bottom tier. Bring them all the way up to a championship tier because the Dallas Wings have been absolutely electric this season. Anybody else that you would – oh, the Lynx, Dewey. We have the Lynx in our mid-tier Lynx. Contenders. I would put the Lynx in a championship contending tier. We have the Sparks, the Tempo, Mercury, and Mystics in our mid-tier contenders. I would demote a couple of those teams. We also had the Fire, the Sun, the Whoops. Sky, and the Storm in the bottom tier. I don't think that we were drastically, you know, wrong about any of those teams, but it would absolutely elevate the Valkyries, the Lynx, and the Wings into that championship contending tier, or at least postseason contending tier.
Yeah, Valkyrie's defense is incredible. They beat the Fever last night. Did it out of their defense, but their offense is really good and they're really deep. I like the way that they play. The Wings, I feel like when we talked about them, I think you would put them in a status of like, we want to see first.
Yeah.
What is most interesting to me about the Wings in terms of that we want to see first is that it is not Alana Smith doing the heavy lifting in the front court. It's actually Jessica Shepherd, who has been incredible for them. Incredible. We're going to get into player awards and how that adjusted, but I think that's the biggest reason that Dallas has improved, as well as AZ Fudd's defense, which is often overlooked. And then the last one we had was the Lynx, and we've talked about the Lynx. And I think we said at the beginning of the year, like, you can't overlook Cheryl. We wouldn't be surprised. So are we that surprised? No.
No. In Cheryl, we trust. No. That I'm going to get it tattooed because we say it so many times on this show. That's not true, but it would be, that would right be pretty crazy. And I also, I don't think we knew Olivia Miles was going to be a great player in the WNBA. Yeah. I don't think any of us expected Olivia Miles to be this great. So we put the Lynx in that mid-tier contending tier, mostly because of Nafisa Collier's injury. We just didn't know what that team was mm-hmm. going to look like without her. They're good without V. So we'll wait and see what that team looks like whenever she does come back into the fold. She's been back out on the court. She's been back out practicing. So it's really right now a matter of when, not if, we see Nafisa Collier back out on the court. Of course, if everything goes according to plan. Mention individual awards. We made some of our preseason mm-hmm. predictions. I believe we both had Caitlin Clark. We both agreed that Caitlin would be – that was our preseason pick for MVP. Important to point out that when we had this MVP discussion, neither of us picked Asia Wilson because we just wanted to be fun, okay? It's easy to pick Asia Wilson as a preseason MVP. We wanted to be different. But right now, if I had a vote, and I don't, and I'd love one, if anybody's listening, if the season ended today, Asia Wilson would be my MVP.
Yeah, absolutely. Asia Wilson is still doing Asia Wilson things. I think also it's so important to point out, and maybe we did at the beginning of the year, but I think it's important in this conversation right now. Asia Wilson is your MVP, but as a voter, you have to fill out a top five, and that goes into figuring out the points and MVP. And so it is, I think people get lost. They're like, oh, well, this is my MVP. the other ones are actually really important to have a conversation about and kind of where they line up. So I'll throw out, Caitlin has not had a good couple of stretches of games. She's on a minutes restriction, those injuries, but otherwise having incredible season and numbers that's very much overlooked. She won player of the month last month. Brianna Stewart, she's kind of the Liberty representative. We talked about Alyssa Thomas and Nafisa at the beginning of the year, but AT, the Mercury are not going to be competitive for her to be in there. Collier has not played. I want to hear any add-ons you have, but I added on Olivia Miles and Paige Beckers, although it is very hard for a guard to win MVP, but they will certainly be on ballots.
Olivia Miles should be in the conversation to win MVP. You and I both picked Olivia Miles preseason to win Rookie of the Year. Pat ourselves on the back. That's going to happen. Sign, sealed, delivered. Olivia Miles is locked in as the Rookie of the Year. Do you disagree?
I only disagree because I don't like saying those kinds of things. A lot could happen, right? Like, she could be injured for the rest of the season. And then what does it look like?
Knock on wood.
If I were voting right now, hands down, Rookie of the Year. Absolutely no problem saying that. But that's my only caveat.
Yeah, of course, things can change. Yes, but Olivia Miles, I don't know what the betting odds are right now, but last time I checked, she was like minus 50,000 to win Rookie of the Year. Vegas isn't everything.
You're just more bold than me. You're like, lock it in. And I'm like, wait, my ballot isn't due for another 2 months.
I'm locking it in. And that's the reason why I don't have a vote. And you do. but I think Olivia Miles does need to be in the MVP conversation. Important to point out, we've only ever had one MVP win in their rookie season and also in Rookie of the Year. That was Candace Parker in 2008. That's also when fan votes counted, which was a wild, wild time in the WNBA.
My favorite little nugget, yeah.
It's an important nugget to point out there, but she is the only ever player to win Rookie of the Year and MVP in the same season. I think Olivia Miles can be in that conversation. Paige is a fascinating one to me. And MVP is also up to interpretation, I believe. MVP is a very subjective award. Do you think it's the best player on the best team? In some years, it absolutely can be. Are you the player that if you take this player away from your team is drastically different than you are with it? That's how you want to interpret it some years? Totally up to you. The reason why Paige, and I think she should be in the conversation, but if I had a vote today, it wouldn't be Paige, is because of a player that you mentioned earlier, and that's Jessica Shepherd, and how important she has been to the Dallas Wings, you know, winning this season. Paige has been the most important part of winning on that team this season, in my opinion. But to me, MVP can be, you take this player away, and this team is wildly different than they were, and Jessica Shepherd has been such an important part to the Dallas Wings turnaround, that maybe she doesn't seem as valuable to her team as maybe some other players are to their respective teams.
I love that call out. I also want to throw in here before we move on, when it comes to MVP, you said it, like there's a lot of people who vote the best player on the best team. And there have been conversations in the past by coaches that like, oh, the best player on the first or second team has won however many years. Mm-hmm. The standings are incredibly close. So I wonder if you're a top four team, which is usually how I judge my MVP ballot. It's a little wishy-washy, but you never know. If you're a top four team and you're number four, you know, say Dallas finishes number four, but they're only 2 games out of first place. I feel like that still gives you like a nice little boost because you're the best player on one of the very best teams. You just fell 2 games short of first place.
There are less than three games that separate first place from fourth place in the league. Minnesota Lynx are 19-6. Dallas in fourth are 16-8. So yeah, to your point, if your argument, and mine is not, but if it is, hey, I think that Olivia Miles should be MVP because she's the best player. She's the highest scorer on the number one team in the WNBA and Paige Beckers isn't. Well, not enough of a divide there. Words are hard for that to be the ultimate deciding factor or the ultimate differentiating factor here. We mentioned Rookie of the Year. Olivia Miles would be it today. We also mentioned, of course, preseason AZ Fudd would also be in that conversation. Coach of the Year. We threw out Stephanie White as a contender preseason. We threw out Carl Smesko as a contender preseason. Sandy Brondello, and Sandy Brondello we trust. Becky Hammond was also – Becky Hammond's always going to be in the Coach of the Year conversation. You ultimately decided on Lynn Roberts as your Coach of the Year. How are we feeling? You know, sometimes in life you have to take risks.
I did say, to be clear, I knew it was a risk.
I think we talked about this when we made our preseason awards. You don't always make these preseason predictions to be right. Like, if we wanted to be right, we would have picked the Aces to win a championship, Asia Wilson to win MVP, probably Becky Hammond to win Coach of the Year. But that's not always fun. Sometimes you just have to take some swings, and sometimes you miss. You're right about a lot of things. I picked Jose Fernandez as Coach of the Year. I feel really good about that prediction, honestly, because we talked about that preseason, that we did expect the Dallas Wings to take that leap. I didn't expect the Dallas Wings to take this big of a leap, because I don't think I expected Jessica Shepherd to be as big of a part of this team and to take as big of a leap as she had. So I will give myself a pat on the back here, because I am proud of that prediction. Anybody else that you would want to insert into that conversation?
I forgot your list already, but I would say Cheryl Reeve for sure.
Definitely.
She won this award for the same reason a couple of years ago, in that the Lynx are just so much better than we thought they would be. And Collier hasn't even played a minute. The things Cheryl can do with a roster and in free agency with players who maybe aren't in that top tier echelon is truly incredible. There's a reason she has been with Minnesota this long, won as much as she has. So Cheryl Reeve, I think in terms of kind of the Lynn Roberts type reasoning, that your team performed better than it did last year and makes the playoffs and has a big turnaround, could be Alex Sarama at Portland. They've done better than I think most of us expected. And Sandy Brondello in Toronto. Those are two teams just outside of the playoffs right now, but there's an entire half of the season to play. And certainly if they make the playoffs and are in a good position there, I think it's worth considering kind of the way that people voted Natalie Nicasse last year.
Yeah, I love that call out by you. Looking at Defensive Player of the Year, your preseason pick was ultimately Gabby Williams.
Great call by you.
Yeah. I picked Angel Reese. I mean, she leads the league in rebounds. Yeah. I don't think that was a totally far off prediction there. But of course, we've talked about Asia Wilson. She's always going to be in the conversation. Alana Smith was in the conversation as well. I think that you can put Natasha Howard into that conversation that we did not originally have preseason. Anybody else?
You know, I always have an eye on Aaliyah Boston. I think probably that their defense is not going to finish, you know, top 1, 2, 3 is going to impact her a little bit. But she does do some really solid stuff against some of the best players in the league. At this point, though, especially since I did not do well on the last category, I'm just going to stick with Gabby.
I think that's a great call.
Ride that one.
It's a great call. Ride that one. No, that was a great call out by you. Look, I feel a little silly about this one now, too, for Six Women of the Year. I picked Cameron Brink.
We can go deep on this. Carry on.
On Six Women?
Yeah, because, well, okay. I don't think you should feel embarrassed or wrong. And I'm not saying it because it's you. Like,
nice
six
you.
Player is so hard. And when I went back and looked at my preseason article about this, all of the six player candidates were just ended up being completely off base. And it's hard because you don't know what the rotation is like. We've had so many injuries that have impacted it. Like, Cam Brink is a good option, but she also has played in what, like 10 games?
4 seconds.
Why didn't you see that in your crystal ball, Caroline?
I don't know. I didn't. That's so Ravenless, okay? I couldn't see into the future. But it is a very fair call-up by you, because there is, to my knowledge, zero specifications for what six women of the year can be, other than they come off the bench. So
there's one specification. You have to come off the bench for more games than you start. That's the only specification. It's the only award with a specification.
It needs one because it is incredibly difficult. And all of these awards obviously are subjective, but this feels like one that has so much more room for interpretation. But to your point, you don't preseason, at least when we gave out our preseason awards, you don't know what the rotations are going to look like. You don't know who's going to have to step up and play more of a starting role at some point in the season. But Benajelani Hamilton was your preseason pick. We also considered Lexi Hull and Sophie Cunningham. I think fair to say right now, even with an award with so much gray area, Sophie Cunningham feels like one of the leaders in the clubhouse for that award.
Very much so. Before we move on to our quick picks, just since we're talking about it, we don't want to skip over it. Kennedy Carter was also in this race, is no longer on a team. I mean, if we had this podcast 2 weeks ago, she's all we're talking about, right? Her production, just it cannot be argued with. Seems like there was other stuff going on there. But Benajelani Hamilton, I really thought would be a top player off the bench for a Liberty team that was going to be really competitive. Now it looks like she might even be on the trade talk. This was a player who was incredibly impactful for them in their championship run. And now she's just not seeing the minutes. And in the few times I've seen her play minutes, they haven't been as impactful as you would hope. And then we also had Naz Hillman in our editorial list, who has had to start every game for Atlanta so far. Pretty sure she is now disqualified because Breonna Jones is out. I agree with you. Sophie Cunningham is definitely at the top of my list. What she's been able to do for the Fever with Lexi Hull in the starting lineup, she's the leader of that bench crew. She's been absolutely phenomenal. She's on a true heater right now. Yeah. And if she keeps it up, I think she will finally win this award because it feels like she's always in conversation. If I recall, 1 year in Phoenix, she was in conversation at this point. And then she joined the starting lineup and no longer qualified. I would also throw out Janelle Salone at the Valkyries. Mm. Or a lot of them, probably.
And that's the thing is you have so many options of players coming off the bench that play huge roles. But what about the weekend Sophie Cunningham had? She was a ring girl at a UFC fight, and she turns around, drops 20, and drains 6 of 7 from beyond the arc against the Vegas Aces. Dana White's in the crowd. My goodness. What a weekend for old Sophie there. Okay. Would you like to make your picks? Ultimate midseason picks.
Let's go Sophie for sixth player. I said Gabby for defense, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like at this point, like Asia Wilson is in the lead for MVP.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna list them because I didn't think about that beforehand. And this will live on in infamy.
Forever and always.
What am I saying?
The internet's not
rookie
kind.
No. Rookie is Olivia.
Yeah.
Am I missing one?
Coach of the year.
Oh, coach of the year. I mean, I'll give it to Cheryl right now at the midseason point. Lynx are in the lead. They haven't even had feedback. I think she absolutely deserves it for that. She could also win executive of the year, which is voted on not by the media. It's by executives, I believe.
That feels wrong.
Owners, maybe.
But they vote on each other.
I mean, they can't vote for themselves.
You know what? You should be able to vote on yourself. Asia Wilson's my MVP today. I feel the need to do this every time. We can change our minds because things change. Like, we are allowed to change our minds when we have new data and new games that are being played and new considerations to keep in mind.
Every game is a data point. Clip that.
Yeah. Olivia Miles is my rookie of the year as of today, July 16th.
We're on one today.
I'm sticking with Jose Fernandez as my preseason pick. I'm going to stay in my couple with Sincere. I love coach of the year because I always think it's very easy to vote coach of the year, MVP, whatever it might be. Coach of the best team, best player on the best team. And those are not invalid reasons to vote for somebody for a respective award. I think, though, that the coaching job that Jose Fernandez has done, going from the Wings being at the bottom of the league last year to now the top of the league this year, expert coaching job by him. Defensive player of the year, I'll go Natasha Howard. I'm going to switch up from my Angel Reese pick. I'll throw Natasha Howard into the mix, and Sophie Cunningham will be my sixth woman of the year.
We have some different votes here, but I respect all of your choices. These are good reasonings.
I respect your choices as well. We zero disagreement here. A little bit, but it's all love.
Are these subtweets? Do these count as subtweets?
This is a perfect example for everybody listening of how you can disagree with somebody and not hate them and not be mean to them and still be nice to them. And we can coexist in a world where we don't always agree on all of the same things. End point there. Clip that off. We mentioned it. Paige Bueckers is an MVP contender at this point in the season. So who better to talk to next than Paige Bueckers herself that joins Hoops 360 in just a minute. You've known her and you've loved her for years. Paige Bueckers from the Dallas Wings. First, I want to talk about you and what the season has been for you so far. All-star for a second year in a row. But how much different does this point of the season feel in year two versus your rookie season?
Yeah, I mean, obviously different group, a lot of different teammates, a different coaching staff. And last year I enjoyed the season. It was different in terms of result, if you look at it in a result-based way. But the growth, the fun, the passion, the joy, just the gratitude of being in the WNBA and being out there with my teammates and going to war, regardless of win or loss, I always enjoy that and enjoy the journey of everything. And then this season, obviously, the results are a little bit different. I think we're sitting at 16-8. And we're growing, we're continuing to get better. We're learning how to win. We're learning how to grow together. And we really just enjoy being around each other. And I think that's the best part about it is that we love being around each other. It's not even like work. It's just coming in, loving what we're doing, growing, trying to get better and improving from game to game and staying in the present. So really happy with where we are. Obviously, there's a lot of room to grow, but staying in the present and where we are, really enjoying it.
You're heading into your second All-Star. It can be a long weekend with everything going on, brand commitments, parties, obviously the actual event. What did you learn last year in your first time around that you're kind of taking into this year, whether it be a way to enjoy it more or just to juggle it all?
That it's not a break at all. That it's a mix of a whole lot of fun and a whole lot of work and a little bit of business and taking care of what you need to on the off the court aspect of it. But it's so much fun. Last year was really a dream come true for me, and I really just was so happy to be there. Like, you couldn't wipe the smile off my face of just being around legends, Hall of Famers, and people that I've looked up to my whole life. And so just the same thing this year. Like, I never want to take it for granted where I'm at and to have fun it's obviously a break from games during the regular season. So you want to get like rest recovered, but you also want to, like, this is the dream you had when you were 5 years old, like going to All-Star weekend, being a part of it, being surrounded by so many amazing people and amazing women. So to enjoy it, soak it up as much as possible, and really take no moment for granted.
I felt like last year, WNBA All-Star just kind of took the sports world by storm. Whether it was the Stud Buds live stream or the game itself, it felt like this event just continues to build more and more popularity. From your opinion, what do you feel like WNBA All-Star does right and does well for the players? And maybe what's one area that can improve?
Yeah, I think just the platform we're given, obviously Courtney and T, they did a really good job of just bringing their own light to it and bringing their own creative side to it, going with the all weekend stream. And everybody was tuned in, but I think the media did a great job of giving that publicity, giving that coverage, letting people know what was happening. And just to be able to show people's side of who they are outside of basketball. The season is so wrapped up in, you can lose your identity in your sport, but to show the personalities of us, the fashion side of it was really cool. And to have like a different connection, and to see people outside of your sport, I think is really important to grow the game and have people who support the W and support players build, feel like they're building a relationship with the league, with the players, and feel like they're part of something so much bigger than ourselves. So I think that's the great aspect of it. Obviously, I wish the break was a little bit longer, and the activities were a little bit more spread out. But it is what it is, and we all have to deal with it, and we're all going through it the same way. And not to like complain about it at all, like we're all living our dreams and we're really grateful to be there for All-Star Weekend. So it's all good vibes for sure.
You mentioned it can be really easy to lose your identity and lose your sense of self. And I think when you gain a platform, which you've had for a long time, it can be really hard to follow that inner self while juggling what everyone else wants you to be, right? You mentioned your business and all of that. What are some really clear ways that you go about staying true to yourself amid everything that this season has been already?
I think it's largely based around my faith, and knowing like my identity is so much bigger than the game of basketball, and letting go of so many other people's opinions of myself, and really just caring about my circle and the people that are important to me and the people that see me every day and the people who know my intentions and know my heart, and just staying present. I feel like it's so easy to get wrapped up in what people want you to be, what the expectations are, what you want your future to look like, the mistakes you made in the past. But to really just soak it up and enjoy where your feet are, I think that's the best way to really just be so present that you're not worried about anything else and you're not worried about anything other than who you are in that moment and losing your identity. And to know, like, from my faith, like, nothing is performance based. Nothing is like, if you win this, you get that. If you lose this, you don't get that. Like, to have that faith that regardless of circumstance, you can have joy, you can have passion, you can be just living love. I think that's the best thing that I've tried to do, to just let go of any like outside noise.
It's so refreshing to hear you say that, because I'm sure as somebody who has built a career and a platform based on basketball, sometimes it can be hard to remind yourself that you are a human above a basketball player and that there is so much more to you than just being an athlete. So I think that's a message that a lot of athletes would appreciate hearing. I do want to talk about your head coach, Jose Fernandez, for a little bit. When we go back to the beginning of the season, Jose Fernandez in a press conference said, he called out some, quote, selfishness in the locker room. And I thought, oh, whoa, it's pretty early to be calling out things like that in the locker room. Like, it was the first couple of weeks of the season. But instead of maybe pushing back on that, it felt like it maybe challenged your locker room to prove more, to show more. And now, like you mentioned, here you are, one of the top teams in the WNBA. How would you define Jose Fernandez's culture that he's built in Dallas?
It's like a we over me mentality. And I think part of that too is us having a really deep team and a really competitive team and so many people on our team that can contribute to winning basketball. So not to mistake that for being selfish, or just worried about yourself. But for us, it's about like, on any given night, it could be somebody's night and somebody might have to sacrifice minutes, playing time, shots, and we understand that we all have the same common goal and we all want to win. And we've learned that it only forms through repetition. There was a lot of new coaching staff, new players. So to learn and grow together and to really, I mean, we have the tough conversations. We have really good relationships with each other. We hold each other accountable. And we talk a lot. So to be over communicative, like Coach Jose, he wants it to be a player-led team. Obviously, he sets the standard and the culture of what we want our identity to be, and that's to be professionals, to be able to sacrifice, to be able to look out for your teammate next to you, to show up to things on time, to take everything serious, every possession, every session in the weight room, every practice, every game. Everything holds weight and has an importance. And just a sacrifice for the person next to you. And I think that's what we've bought into and what we've built for each other, that you can see on any given night. It can be, we have different people step up and different people help in so many different ways. And it's really fun to play basketball that way, where you just bond and grow with your teammates, and learn through the wins and the losses.
It does seem like on a lot of given nights, you are stepping up in the fourth quarter. And I know Gino mentioned that recently. Can you take us through fourth quarter page? Is it something where like the third quarter buzzer sounds and you've got to turn it on, or does it start at the fourth quarter? Like, what contributes to you really turning it on in the final 10 minutes?
Yeah, it's a bad habit for me and the team. If you watch a lot of our games, we're trailing at the end of the third and we're starting off slow in the second half. And we have to find a will to win in the fourth, and I hate that about us. But it obviously this league is like you got to find ways to win, and it might be ugly and it might be, but to have this many games where we're learning how to win in the fourth and learning how to execute during crunch time and clutch time, and I don't know, it's like it's a basketball experience where like you kind of black out sometimes, and you just get in this mode to where you just want to win so bad, and as competitors you try to do everything. You don't think about the pressure, you don't think about the stakes, like the same way one possession in the fourth can dictate a game, the same way the first possession of a game can dictate a game. Like, not everything, it looks like everything is dictated in the fourth quarter, but leading up to that, the first 30 minutes are just as important. So you just try to play the possession, try not to think about the stakes of it. And I've always looked at basketball as every possession is a game within itself. There's always something to coach, there's always a breakdown, there's always a read that you need to make. And after every huddle, you try to talk about that. So as a team collectively, I wish and I hope we're gonna start not waiting until the fourth to like really lock in and hone in on the details and show that level of competition. We want to embrace that for their entire 40 minutes. But yeah, it's something about the Wings in the fourth quarter. We just, I don't know, ultra lock in.
Crunch time, Paige. Paige, appreciate your time. Appreciate just the joy that you have watching you play the game of basketball. It's an absolute blast. So thank you so much for your time. We'll catch up
Thank
later.
you.
Thanks,
Appreciate it.
Paige.
Thank you.
A little new news that just came out on Thursday afternoon. Thursday's Wings Liberty matchup in Dallas has been postponed. The New York Liberty's charter flight has been dealing with some mechanical issues. So if you had that one kind of circled on your calendar, if you were looking forward to watching that game will be postponed until Monday, July 20th. I think the game that I've had circled on my calendar for the last couple of weeks, that game goes down on Saturday, 8 o'clock Eastern time. Liberty and Fever, what are you watching for in that one, Cass?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I just watched the Post Moves podcast that Brianna Stewart was on with Candace Parker and Aaliyah Boston, and Stewie and AB kind of ended it with a little joking tit for tat about throwing elbows and how they were cool with each
Ooh,
other. So
joking, but not joking.
Well, Stewie said that years ago, AB elbowed her like in the teeth because AB was like, "I didn't elbow you." And then she was, you know, AB about it and said, "We don't live in the past." So, I mean, beyond like
Laughing but
the
serious.
yeah, beyond the obvious reasons we are all watching this one, it will go a long way in the standings. The Liberty are on a slide. The Fever want to get back from that Valkyries loss. Caitlin Clark, obviously unsure if she's going to do the back-to-back, but like the player-to-player matchups are fun, and I like to see that one, especially ahead of All-Star.
Yeah. Absolutely. That game is going to be an absolute blast. We've got a bunch more matchups going down this weekend in the WNBA. So we'll be back next week to break down all of the action and, of course, to preview WNBA All-Star, what Cass is going to be looking for when her boots are on the ground in Chicago. So all of that coming up on next week's edition of Hoops 360. She's Cassandra Negley. I am Caroline Fenton. We'll see you then.